Good morning. Good to see all of you today. And thank you for the privilege of speaking today in Ministry Chapel. The year is coming quickly to a close, and I try to spend as much time as I can, as the Lord allows, to fellowship with students, and especially if you're an older student, junior or senior, you're interested in a lunch opportunity. I have some that are open before the school year is out, and so let me know. Just write me at spettit@bju.edu, and if you and some friends would love to get together, I would be more than happy to do that, and it'd be a great opportunity just for fellowship. Dr. Bob Sr. used to preach sermons entitled Things I Have Learned, and they're just practical lessons about life. And when I come to a chapel like this, I feel like in one way it's important maybe to share with you things that I've learned and things that are very practical for you, especially when it comes to the matter of ministry. And so this morning I'd like to share with you some things I learned in my first 2 years of ministry. I graduated from Bob Jones University in 1980. It was the summertime. I was here for 2 years. I did a master's degree. I actually took 57 graduate hours and about 13 or 14 undergrad hours in those 2 years plus summer. And finished here at the end of July. I remember when it was over with because it was kind of a glorious feeling that I was done with school totally. And I drove out to Denver, Colorado. And the next weekend, I got ordained into the ministry. The next weekend, I got married. And then the following weekend, my wife and I drove from Colorado to Michigan, where we started our ministry. In my first 5 years of ministry, I was a youth pastor at the First Baptist Church in Bridgeport, Michigan. Many of you know Dr. Coleman or Uncle Fred. And Fred and I actually worked together in the same church my first 4 years. So Fred had been there a year. I came in, and so we worked side by side. He was the music director. I was the youth pastor. He left in 84. I left in 85 and began the ministry of evangelism. So I was baptized into the ministry in 1980, working with teenagers. And so a number of things I'd like to share with you this morning. I hope they'll be practical and helpful, and things that maybe you can look forward to in the future. The first thing is this, that when I began in my ministry, I suddenly realized that people viewed me differently than I viewed myself. When I got to the church, one of the most shocking things is what they called me. Now, I'd always been called Steve. Nobody called me Mr. Nobody said Sir. They called me Steve, or most of my friends called me Pettit. And that's just the way I responded until I got into the church. And the first thing they did is they called me Pastor. Can I tell you how weird that was? They called me Pastor, and I kind of looked around at them. Are you talking about me? And suddenly, I found myself in a completely new role of responsibility that I had never had before. A part of being a leader is accepting the role of your responsibility and all that goes with that. Because there is a positional leader. The greatest form of leadership is leading by your life, leading by your character. But there's also positions. There's also responsibilities. When I came to Bob Jones University, the weirdest thing I've ever experienced is that I was actually the president of Bob Jones University. I cannot describe to you how weird that feels. I woke up one morning, I went, really? I mean, I went to Bob Jones, and the only people that were going to be the presidents were Joneses. You know, nobody in their right mind ever thought that they would be the president. I mean, you're not sitting here thinking, you know, one day I'd like to take Pettit's position, you know? It was weird. And a part of leadership, and actually probably the greatest burden of leadership, is assuming your responsibility and at the same time recognizing what all that means, not just in your work, but in your life and being an example. And so when you begin in ministry, you have to recognize that people are going to view you differently. And it is important that you become, if I could say it this way, you become that person of responsibility when you step in. It's like getting married. You know, you have no idea what marriage is like till you get married. You know, people ask you after you get married, how do you feel? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how to feel. I'm married, I guess. I said yes. She said yes. That's it. We're done. We're married. But suddenly you enter into a whole new role of life. And you have to embrace, it's part of growing up, it's part of maturing, you embrace the role of your responsibilities. And how do you change? How do you embrace it so that you actually adjust and change? And really three key things. Number one, you've got to have a vibrant walk with God. If you're not walking with God, you're not in a position to change. You're still going to be the same you. But the walk with God is what really changes you, spending time with the Lord. Secondly, you have to recognize the reality that generally we change through the pressures and problems we face in that role. Okay? I came to Bob Jones University, and guess what I found out the day I walked in the front door? There's like all kinds of problems. You say, what are they? I'm not going to tell you, but there's all kinds of problems. And a part of my job is like, wow. All right, let's roll up our sleeves and get into it. When you go in ministry, you're dealing with people, and people are sinners, and sinners have problems. And so you have to embrace your role of responsibility. And then the third area is actually the fulfillment of those duties that you've been given to do and being a responsible person. So let me just say this. If you're an RA, a part of learning to be a leader is to embrace your role. Some of you became RA. How many of you are RAs? Okay. Some of you became RAs and you got into it and you're saying, I'm not so sure I like this role of responsibility. But that is a part of growing and maturing. You embrace the responsibility and the role that you have, and you recognize their pressures and duties, and you see, look, if you don't want to embrace the role of responsibility now, you're not going to do it later. Okay? It's not like, you know, when I graduate, it gets a little bit easier. It's not that way at all. And so I learned very, very quickly that people viewed me differently because I stepped into a role and I needed to grow in that role. Second thing I learned is this, that ministry is a lot more about people than anything else. Now, we kind of know that in our head, but the reality is there's a tendency when you get in ministry, it's kind of like what you've done in school. You've just sort of taken care of your job and you're supposed to do your job. You know, you come to school, you get your education, you do what you got to do, and, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean people are involved. But once you step into real ministry, you suddenly realize that my ministry is really about people. People do not care how much you know until people know how much you care. When we ran our team ministry for 20 years, we used to have college graduates come and travel with us. Many of them were Bob Jones graduates. Probably about 80% of our team over a period of 20 years were BJU grads. So I know what Bob Jones grads are like. And so one of the first things I had to teach them, what to do when you go into church. Because the tendency when you go to church is what? You walk in and what? Sit down. I said, but in ministry, you don't walk into church and sit down. You walk into church and you meet people. You greet people. And so I remember our first Sunday, we'd walk in and they're all sitting on the front row. I said, what are you guys doing? They looked at me like, what? I said, what are you guys doing? I said, do you see my wife? What is my wife doing? And they sort of kind of turn around and look, and my wife is shaking everybody's hand in the church. Before the day was over, my wife usually shook everybody's hand in the church. I said, do you see what she's doing? I said, that's what you need to be doing. I said, because we're actually here to not sing to people. You're not here to sing. You're here to serve. And singing is a part of that. So when you get into the ministry, you begin to realize that ministry is a lot more about people than anything else. When our team members would stay in people's home, one of the things is you learn when you travel and you're staying in people's homes, I mean, it's not like staying in a motel room. Well, you close the door, turn the TV on, lay on the bed, and just crash. When you go into that home, you're actually serving the people while you're there. So the tendency we found was that there were a lot of our team members had to learn that ministry, you know, the tendency is I want me time. But actually, you need to have we time. That is where you go in the house and they actually have some children there. And actually, we time is hanging out with the children, talking to them. And our best team members were always those that by the end of the week, the family fell in love with the team because it was not me time, but we time. And they learned that ministry is about serving people. A number of years ago, I was in a church and a pastor was really frustrated that the church wasn't growing. I said, how many men are on your staff? I said, how many paid men are on your staff? He said, 7. I said, how many of your men on your staff are actually pastors? And by pastors, it means they reach people, they teach people, they feed people, and they lead people. And he kind of thought a minute. He said, well, 2 of us, me and the youth pastor. I said, so the other 5 guys, all they are doing is managing what you've got, right? He said, right. I said, that's why you're not growing. I said, churches don't grow because you have managers. Churches grow because you have leaders. I was a member of a church in Brookside Baptist Church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where Dr. Sam Horn was the pastor. The church went from 300 to 900 in about 5 years. And it wasn't just because of Sam Horn, although that he had a lot to do with it. It was the fact that he had 7 guys on the church, and they were all people who reached people, they taught people, they fed people, and they led people. They weren't managers. They were pastors. They were servants. They were involved in people's lives. And so what is ministry? Ministry is investing yourself in the life of people. It's not just sitting at a desk and doing charts and studying and, you know, figuring out an organization and how to do it. It's actually getting out and getting your hands dirty. It's working with people. It's investing yourself in people's lives. Then number 3, the third thing I learned in my first 2 years of ministry is that in marriage, if you go into ministry, both the husband and the wife need to be completely dedicated to what you're doing. Let me say it again. In ministry, both of you need to be committed. My wife is as committed to the ministry as I am. Now, that doesn't mean we do the same thing. And it doesn't mean that my wife doesn't have a different kind of a role, because she definitely does. But both of us are committed to being in the ministry. I would recommend that you make sure that if you are marrying a guy that's going to go into the ministry, that you've settled in your heart. You know, you might be a little reluctant. You might be a little scared. For example, my wife, when we started dating, she wanted to be in the ministry, but she told me, she said, I don't want to be married to a pastor. And the reason why is she didn't want to be a pastor's wife. And so we've been married 38 years, and I've never pastored a church. I've been an assistant pastor. She was okay with that. But she didn't want to be the head guy. So I'm just the president of Bob Jones. I'm not a pastor, okay? Less pressure. But I would recommend that both of you be committed. Ministry is challenging enough. And there will be all kinds of demands placed upon you. So if your viewpoint of life is marrying a guy in the ministry, and then you have your own nice little house with your own little white picket fence and your 10 children in the front yard playing, of course, all homeschooled. And you're going to go to church like everybody else, sit there and take your kids home. You know what? You're living in a dream world. Both of you need to be committed. Ministry is challenging enough. And many, many struggles in ministry are actually marital struggles over the ministry itself. I'm so thankful for my wife. My wife is committed, sacrificial, and she is tough. My wife is tough. We lived 30 years in a fifth-wheel trailer. People say, man, you're on vacation all the time. Yeah, right. I was thinking this morning when my girls, my Becca and Rachel, were like, you know, like 7 and 5 or, I don't remember, 9 and 7, something like that. We closed out a revival meeting in January in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. We were living in a fifth-wheel trailer. That means out in an open field. You know, we parked our trailer, and it's a camper. It's not made for the UP in the winter. But we actually had fairly decent weather that week, and when the week was over with, we left, actually drove out on a Friday night because there was an incredible storm that was coming that was going to be like, you know, sub-zero weather, like 20 below zero. And I remember driving across the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, getting to Mackinac City. If you're from Michigan, you know exactly where I'm talking, and taking I-75 south to Saginaw, Michigan. When we arrived at the church, it was like 20 degrees below zero. We had a glass of water that fell on the floor in the carpet, and the carpet froze. And we got there and turned on the heat, went inside the church. We slept in the pew just to stay warm until the trailer warmed up, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, we scooped up our children, went back, got out in our beds. You know, now, you do that a lot. After a while, your wife is not always that happy. And if my wife was not committed and dedicated, there are nights like that that would have worn us down, and we would have not survived. How do you do this? Let me say this. We've never viewed life by the list. You know, like, you've heard people say this: God first, family second, ministry third. You ever heard that? Okay. I'm not against that, but we've never lived that way. Because it doesn't work that way. Life doesn't have a list, all right? God first, family second, you know, ministry third. Okay, so ministry's down here, family's here, God's here. I wish it was that way. But we always viewed it differently. We viewed as Christ is the center of our life and everything flows out. And so there's sometimes, for example, ministry is going to take priority over family. But it doesn't mean that Christ isn't the center of it all. It's not self as the center, it's Christ as the center. When my wife got cancer in 1998, I had to travel 4 months on the road by myself and leave my wife and children at home. And we did that because we believe that's what God wanted us to do. And so I went 80 days, and out of 80 days, I saw my wife 2 days. And when I saw her, she had been going through chemo treatment, and she had lost all her hair. When I saw her, when I left, she had a full head of hair. When I came back, she was as bald as a cue ball. Of course, my wife, you have to know my wife, she makes fun of everything. So she always makes fun of herself. So I walked in, and she wasn't wearing a wig. She met me at the front door, you know, here I am, bald. And she looked at me, she says, well, how does it feel kissing Telly Savalas? Some of you don't know Telly Savalas, but he was a bald dude. I was home 2 days, I had to leave. I didn't see her again for 40 days. It was terrible. But you know what? If Christ is the center of your life in everything you do, everything flows out. Everything is from Him, everything is by Him, and everything is for Him. Build your relationship on Jesus Christ first. Let that be the center, and that's what holds the two of you together. Then number 4. Fourth lesson I learned is this, that you have to learn to be faithful and serve in the place where God has placed you and stay there and be faithful. I mean, you've heard that a lot, but that's the reality. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 10, Jesus talked about being faithful in things, and he talked about some of the things we're to be faithful in, like little things. You know, when you go to work in a church, you're going to be given little duties to do. Faithful in, for example, another person's ministry. If I'm not driven to make another person successful, then I really don't understand ministry. Because really, my job today is to make you successful. That's really my job. My job is not about me. It's not about who I am. It's about me being in a place where I have a responsibility to make you as a student as successful as possible. So that all of our decisions are geared in that direction so that we can do for you everything that we possibly can do. That's ministry. Now, if I go to work in a church, then I want to make that pastor and the people of that church as successful as possible. So that's what Jesus means. He says, be faithful in another person's ministry. He said, be faithful in unrighteous man and mammon, be faithful in money. You start out in ministry. I started out in ministry. I made $250 a week. I didn't believe in tithing. I believed in giving more, so we gave a double tithe. We gave 20% back to the church. So I actually was living off $200 a week. By the way, that's not much money. Our food budget was $35 a week. My pastor decided to start a building program, and he called it Together We Grow. We had to build a building, and of course, we had to all be committed to it because we're the leaders. And so I committed another 10%. So we're giving 30% back to the church. We called it Together We Die. So my budget went from $200 down to $175. We lived off $175 a week. That's being married in an apartment, paying for everything, eating off of that. So for the first 5 years of our marriage, we had very, very little. I mean, I'm talking about like furniture. You came to our house, we had one couch and a rocking chair in the living room, a little bean bag. That was it. We had a table that was given to us, chairs that were given to us. I remember we spent $300 on the whole bedroom furniture suite. It was all used, by the way. And I thought, man, I am spending big bucks, $300 for a bed, you know, dresser, drawers, the whole nine yards. And you know what? We learned to give and trust God, and we lived really financially tight. But you know what we learned? We learned God supplied. Now, I'm not saying you have to live that way. I'm just saying what we did. But we had to learn to be faithful in the money, and as time has gone along over the years and trusting God, and we got into our evangelistic ministry, and then soon the Lord allowed us to become debt-free in our evangelistic ministry. And the day that I became debt-free, we started our team, and for 20 years we carried a team and trained 52 people. We could have never done that if we weren't disciplined in our finances. Now I'm at Bob Jones University. All of a sudden, the budget's like, it's just a whole lot more zeros, you know? I mean a whole lot more zeros. But it's the same thing. And here's the point. Ministry is not like some big thing over here and the little things don't matter. The little things are the ministry. You do the little stuff. And you're faithful in doing the little stuff and seeking to be balanced and learning to serve other people and make other people successful and be faithful and be content on the little things that you have. All of those things are vital. Because if you can be little, faithful in little, you can be faithful in much. Now, I've got a couple other things. I'll finish with this last thing. And that is this. You must, in the ministry, and I learned this my first 2 years, because you're young and immature, and you have to learn to guard your reactions. You have to learn how to guard your reactions. People do not judge you just by how you act. They judge you how you react. It's like the pastor who lost his temper. How many of you have ever seen anybody lose their temper? And the moment they lose their temper, they lose something else. They lose their testimony. I remember going out playing golf with a young pastor. I was like 22 years old, 23. And I went out with this pastor and his brother-in-law, who was a buddy of mine. The pastor couldn't have been more than 25 or 26. I remember coming back in Main Street in Denver, Colorado, and a car whipped out in front of the pastor. And you know, you can always tell how spiritual people are by the way they react when they drive cars and play sports. And this car whipped out in front of this preacher, and I don't know what happened, but I almost started laughing. He reached down underneath the seat, grabbed a tire tool, and raised it up and started yelling at the guy, shaking at the guy, and said, "I'll break your head!" I was sitting in the back seat going, Temper, temper, temper. I saw that exact same pastor probably 5 or 6 years later at a pastor's conference. Hadn't seen him since then. Guess the first thing I thought? People don't judge you by the way you act. They judge you by the way you react. When I was a youth pastor, we were having an activity one night, and I was trying to get everybody quiet, and they were running around. We were doing stuff, and one kid who was a squirrely dude. He was always pushing the edge. He had a dodgeball in his hand, and he threw it at me, and it hit me in the head. And at that moment, I totally forgot that I was a pastor, that I suddenly became an assassin. And I looked at him, and I started, and he knew it. He saw it in my eyes. I started chasing him. And literally, he was running for his life. And then somehow in that process of those murderous desires I had, God arrested me and thought, what are you doing? And so I backed off. And I learned something. People judge you by your reactions. A part of leadership is serving, listening, loving, and guarding your reactions, because you're known by the way you react throughout the course of your life. So those are little simple lessons I've learned, and those are lessons that we'll all learn as we seek to follow and serve God. God bless you. Have a great day. Thank you.